Welcome to the Vet Podcast by the Vet Gurus, Brendan and Mark. Get ready for the latest veterinary news, information and entertainment. Don't forget to visit us at the Vet Gurus website, vetgurus.com. Now, sit back, relax. It's over to the Vet Gurus, Brendan and Mark.
Welcome. We're back for another week, episode 344. Brendan here with Mark, Thursday, April 25th, 2024. And we had a bit of fun last week, didn't we, Mark? We dropped one of our pre-recorded episodes because you were in a little bit of ill health, weren't you?
Well, I was on the road to recovery, Brendan.
Yes, you were.
The coughing, I managed to tickle my throat in my excitement of talking with you and our wonderful listeners. And once it started, I couldn't stop. So we had to call it quits. And I hope I don't have the same problem tonight.
Yes.
I've got all the meds.
You blew my headphones off, Mark, at one stage, and I had to literally take them off with the coughing fit. But it's good to hear your voice and good to see you are almost back to normal, Mark, after your little upper respiratory issue there. And welcome to all our new listeners, Mark, and welcome back to all our subscribers. vetgurus.com. Send us an email, vetgurus@gmail.com. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Say hello. Send us a topic for a podcast. We welcome topics, don't we, Mark? And it's amazing some of the topics that people come up with that we never thought of. So it's something we always look forward to hearing from our listeners, don't we?
Indeed we do. And those topics, like, it is fascinating how, like, what did we say, 344?
Yes.
And we still, between the two of us, come up with ideas and topics, things that we've dealt with. But it's always good to have a few ideas from outside the Brains Trust. And so we do look forward to those emails and messages about other things that people would like us to talk about.
Yes, yes. And speaking of nothing's, no segue. I think you wanted to chat a little bit about what you've been up to and what your plans are, Mark. What have you been? It sounds like you've been busy the last few weeks.
It has been busy because we're packing up, Brendan. We've been up here in the tropical north for 18 months now, and Kate and I are just putting the final touches to the camper, and we're heading back down to Newcastle before we head off on our next adventure. And Kate, while we've been up here, Kate's been working at the pharmacy, and we were over the moon that the pharmacy here in Bamaga on the mainland is administered by the people who own the pharmacy on Thursday Island, and they invited Kate and I over for the weekend. So we caught the ferry over to Thursday Island.
On Friday.
Yes. And we spent the weekend on Thursday Island, and we did hop in a boat on Sunday and shoot around to one of the other islands in the Torres Strait, Prince of Wales Island, and wandered up, did a bit of a bush walk, and had a bit of a swim. We haven't been able to swim as much up here, obviously, because most waterholes have crocodiles in them, but walking up into the forest on Prince of Wales, we could get away from where the salties could get. And under the waterfall, we had a bit of a swim in the tropical sun. It was pretty idyllic, Brendan.
Excellent. Not that I'm jealous, as ever. I didn't get a chance to. I was just ruminating there, Mark. I don't think I, at one stage, I was tentatively thinking maybe I should try and get up to visit you up there, but it's only taken me, a year and a half, 2 years to realise I didn't get there in time to see you there.
Look, I think that the opportunity will arise in the future. I think there's a reasonable chance that with the palm cockatoo research that's ongoing and also some of the crocodile stuff, that at some point, I'll probably stick my head back in up here and yeah, I'd love to show you the countryside up here.
Well, yeah, perhaps we can make it happen at some stage, Mark. Yes. Okay, enough holiday chit-chat.
we'll get to that later.
Yes, good point. I think we wanted to talk a little bit about our main and only news topic, Mark. It's relating to a bit of a peculiar breed, Mark, the Australian Shepherds and the popularity of Australian Shepherds and a little bit about the provenance of them, Mark. And I think this article came out because of the fact that a couple of weeks ago, Mark, a three-year-old Australian Shepherd called Viking claimed the overall title at Crufts, the world's most prestigious dog show in England, Mark. So what do you think of that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me that an Australian Shepherd would win a dog competition based on their agility and activity and speed, because geez, isn't that, that's the breeds that have gone to make up the Australian Shepherd. That's what they do.
Yes, well, the quirky bit is, and the interesting bit is that they, you know, even though they're named Australian Shepherds, they certainly, almost certainly didn't originate from Australia, did they, Mark? Where do they come from? What's the origin of this breed, Mark?
Well, I think it's, I'm laughing here because you sent me the one of the articles, but it won't open. It's behind a paywall. So I'm going to say that off the top of my head, I think they're an American breed.
Yes. Well, some believe, yeah, they originated in the US, Mark, where they were bred to work on ranches, but others suggest they can be traced back to the Basque region of Spain, Mark, where shepherds first took their dogs with them to Australia and then to the United States. So the Americans called them Australian Shepherds because they came via the...
See, I just thought that was a marketing ploy. I just thought that at the time in the 90s when Australian Shepherds became very, very popular in the United States, that the breeders just called them Australian Shepherds because that would make them easier to shift.
I'm sure there's several different, perhaps we should look at the Wikipedia entry for the Mark as well. Maybe if you pull that up while I continue with this. I mean, supposedly they were first registered here in Australia, Mark, back in 1994 when there were just 55 of them registered, and supposedly now there are more than 1,500 of them, which I think compared to how many of them apparently there are in the US of A markets, it's not much at all, is it? They're very popular pets in the US, aren't they?
And they're good-looking dogs, aren't they, with that merle coat? They remind me strongly of border collies.
Yes. And they're not silly dogs, are they? I think they with their intelligence and agility, they get bored easy, Mark. And I reckon they're a breed that, you know, you need to sort of counsel clients if they're wanting to purchase these, that they just got to make sure that they exercise the minds of their dogs, Mark, not just their legs.
It's interesting that, you know, we're often talking about the things that we need to do for our exotic pets to enhance their environment, to ensure they have a degree of enrichment and behavioural stimulation. But those things apply so much to a breed like this, a working herding breed.
Yes.
I agree entirely with you. They need a highly committed, highly active owner who's prepared to work them hard and keep them entertained, because I think they would develop some behavioural problems if they weren't given those responsibilities that the working dogs need.
Yep, and I've jumped onto the Wikipedia article about it, Mark. Their summary is that the Australian Shepherd descends in part from pastoral dogs brought to herd Spanish flocks in North America as early as the 1500s, and there's also some speculation that they included a mountain sheepdog, and that's where the Merle coat colour comes from, Mark, and it is sometimes claimed the Basque shepherd dog and the Pyrenean shepherd were also among the ancestors of the breed. However, the breed as it is known today developed in California in the 19th century as a sheep herding dog for California shepherds. And the Australian shepherd is also believed to be descended from a variety of herding dogs imported to California with imported sheep, including collies from Australia and New Zealand.
Makes sense. So they're also a fixture on the rodeo circuit, apparently. They're closely associated with the cowboy lifestyle.
Yeah, yes. So there we go. Australian shepherds, Mark, that's our article.
They definitely are rising in popularity. Have you got any?
I think I've got one or two as patients at my clinic, Mark. And, you know, they're busy dogs, aren't they? They're very intelligent dogs. And as I said, you need to have a client who knows that and can look after them correctly, because they'll get bored very easily and become destructive or worse. Yes. So I think with that, Mark, we don't have a segue to our main article here. We're going to talk about where I've been, Mark, and I sort of hinted a couple of episodes ago that I was heading off on a little bit of a trip, primarily a work trip for 95% of the time, Mark, and I was lucky enough to get invited back to teach in China, Mark, for a week in Shanghai about 3 weeks ago. And shout out to any of the delegates there, Mark, that are following the podcast. I obviously did a plug for the podcast, Mark. You'll be proud of me.
I am proud of you.
And it was instantly translated into Mandarin for the group there. So quite a bit of a challenge, Mark. So this is a postgraduate company that is in Europe and Asia, where they provide postgraduate training week courses. This was an advanced exotics one, and we were providing training or teaching on anesthesia, analgesia, and endoscopy and surgery, Mark. So it was small mammals, reptiles, and birds, and was for full on for 5 days, so Monday to Friday. Until around about lunchtime, you would have presentations or lectures. And then every afternoon, we had practical classes where we had both cadavers and some live animals where we were performing anesthesia and surgical techniques and endoscopy on the last day as well. So,
You've done this stuff at many countries, Brendan. And particularly, I know you've done a lot of them here in Australia. What were the things that stood out to you as being different about
China? It's different. Well, as I said, this is the second time I've been there. The first time I took an extra week or so off and travelled around China a bit. This time I was sort of housed in Shanghai and just had a couple of days, one day at each end of the trip. It was a bit of a battle to get there, Mark, actually. Instead of being I think you sort of had a bit of a rundown with that, didn't you? I sent you a couple of texts when I was at different airports, because the plan was fly here from Melbourne to Sydney and then Sydney direct to Shanghai, and a 10 half-hour flight from Sydney. There are direct flights from Melbourne, but I didn't happen to book the direct ones, which was probably a mistake, and was a 1.5-hour transit in Sydney, which didn't work out because the plane in Melbourne early on a Saturday morning, I got up at 5 a.m., sat on the plane for an hour, and then they decided the plane was unserviceable. The engineer said it wasn't going anywhere, so we all deplaned, and then they found us another plane, and we hopped on that plane, and then we sat there for three quarters of an hour, and they had to pull out the luggage because six people decided not to jump on the second plane, so they had to pull out all the luggage from the hold there, Mark. And so by the time I got to Sydney, Deb, who was one of the other lecturers, there was three of us, Deb and myself from Australia and Sid from the Czech Republic. Deb and I were originally booked on the same flight from Sydney to Shanghai, and literally I was texting her as I was landing, and I was trying to convince her to do a panic attack or something to stop the plane. But she would be saying, oh, they shut the front door. We're taxiing. Sorry. And I could literally see her plane taxiing on the taxiway as we landed into Sydney. So I had to go to some transit desk and they said, okay, we're going to get you to Shanghai, but you're going via Jakarta. So Indonesia. And had to wait a few hours to catch that flight, then was in transit for 4.5 hours in Jakarta before I headed over to Shanghai. So it ended up being a 26, 27-hour transit over there. So instead of arriving at about 7 p.m. on that same day, the Saturday in Shanghai, I arrived about 7:30 a.m. the next morning, Mark. So, but them's the break. We got there in the end. Yeah, so what was different was your question, wasn't it? Well, different approach to the acquisition of the animals, Mark. It was quite interesting the way the animals were acquired, and we did
confronting.
I think we were proud of ourselves trying to limit the number of animals we used, both live and cadavers, and reusing them as much as we can. It was a challenge with the obvious challenge there was a language challenge, and with giving presentations, they take, you know, a 1 hour or a 50-minute lecture would take you an hour and a half at least because you speak for 2 or 3 sentences, and then the interpreter who's standing there would then interpret that to Mandarin. There were probably 10, 12 people who could speak English, and so there were a few. Most of the delegates were from China, but there were also some from other Asian countries, so Malaysia, India, maybe Taiwan, I think, as well. So, yeah, just everything takes so much longer, including my jokes, Mark.
I was going to say, how did they go over, Brendan? How? Because you are, for the readers, for our listeners that haven't had the pleasure of attending one of your outstanding presentations, they wouldn't realise that the presentations are smattered with outlandishly hilarious jokes and puns all the way through.
Well,
so how did they go? How did they translate to Mandarin?
I wish I was that funny, Mark. But, we had a few chuckles there, Mark. So I don't know whether that was because they were translated and it was sort of destroyed during the translation or not. Yeah, I know. I think I've told you the story before. The first time I went to China, seemed to be laughing uproariously with all of my jokes, and then at the end of the course, I got to know the interpreter fairly well, and we went out to dinner, all of us, after the conference had finished. And I asked her, I said, you know, I was actually quite surprised how well my jokes translated and came across, and that, you know, jokes must be universal with the appreciation of it. And she paused for a moment and then said, well, actually, Brendan, I'll tell you the truth. And she said, you know, after the first few jokes, I did try to interpret, and then after that I gave up, and then I said, okay. And whenever I was telling a joke, she'd translate in Mandarin. She'd say, okay, get ready to laugh. Brendan's about to give a joke. And then I'd be saying my joke, and then she'd say, okay, laugh now. And then so that was a bit deflating, Mark.
It's that good time. That she was honest about it. But
yes,
that's,
yes.
It
made me laugh.
Made me laugh too.
So, yes. So I think they went okay, the jokes. But, yes, so the very tiring because of the translation bit, and the same with the practical classes. We had split up into three groups, about 35 delegates or so.
That language barrier.
They put the English speakers into one, so they did make up one smaller group with that. So that, you know, when you had that group, it was so much easier for myself, obviously, but. One of, so that was one of the challenges. The other big one was the the range of skills, Mark. Even though this is marked down as one of the advanced courses, there are a big range of skills from vets who were very, very good at all of the things we were dealing with and advanced, and others who were still at that beginner stage. So it's quite difficult if you're doing a prac class and, you're teaching some things that might be basic, some intermediate and some advanced, and some people are bored and some people it's way over their head. So it was
hard. That's hard enough in the circumstance where the language isn't a problem.
Yep.
That is, like, I know from our conferences here in Australia that the the sort of master level masterclasses versus the introductory ones, you really have to pitch those things differently, and you have to, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't do this, you do, but you have to be sensitive to how you have to read the room and adjust your sort of your level as people are picking up or not picking up on what you're saying. And that would be a degree more difficult in another language.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we all got a bit tired by the end of the week. By about halfway through the week, I turned around at one stage. I was demonstrating some local anaesthetic blocks on cadavers for dentals on rabbits. And there's my dog. Jumped up. He's just had surgery, so he's just jumped. He's just spooked himself. So sorry about that. So. What was I saying? And I turned around and there was another, a couple of them had gone off on their own and just decided to jump into another rabbit or two. And one lot's trying to do a liver lobectomy and another lot's doing a lateral ear resection on another.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, stop, stop, stop. And I put my foot down. And I said, okay, well, if you want to learn that, okay, we'll try and go through some of that a little bit later, but let's just concentrate on what's on the agenda at the moment. So it's a matter of pulling people in line and being tough and being the taskmaster.
Mark. Oh, I know you. Yeah. And tell me about the species, like obviously the rabbits you were talking about.
Yeah, so the species? Mammals were rabbits and guinea pigs. We also had some pigeons for the birds, and we just had a local. Sid had I forget what species it was. It was a snake, one of the local snakes, and a couple of lizards there as well. So yeah, so there's a good variety of things, and I think the delegates really enjoyed it, Mark, and we certainly enjoyed it. They were tired by the end of the week, but it was good fun, and
Go ahead.
Yep.
You first.
Well, one of the other challenges I can think of was the anaesthesia section. Was they are very limited with what drugs they're allowed to use in China.
If I understand correctly, they pretty much don't use any opioids.
Yeah. So basically, there's no access to ketamine and all your methadones and. Buprenorphine, etc., Mark. So it does really limit what we can say or what we can advise as far as everything from some of the analgesic sort of combinations, but also the pre-meds as well, Mark, and the anaesthetics, because they are limited with what they can use.
What was your induction agent?
Yeah, so medetomidine with a bit of alfaxolone. They do have alfaxolone. Another really interesting thing, Mark, is they don't have access and allowed to use any of the pentobarbitones. So they do not have a euthanasia solution, the vets in China.
Wow.
So your question's then going to be, how do they euthanize the animals?
They euthanize the animals?
Oh, good question, Mark. So anaesthetize them first, and then they have a potassium. A couple of vials of potassium that you add IV intracardiac, and that does the trick. And the whole story with those drugs, Mark, and lack of availability is that the vets are that the authorities think that they, you know, there's potential for abuse for them with the humans. So that's why they limit them. So yeah. So lots of little challenges there, Mark. But it's always great to see, you know, they've got lots of equipment. Most of the clinics, lots of gear, and lots of fancy stuff. But you know, a wide range of skill sets there, and it's always great to be able to see what way vets and students and vet nurses and vet techs are working, Mark, in different countries.
It really is. I know that you often mention that you have a degree of envy for my remote location and the wonderful things I get to do, but also that's a two-way street. I get a little bit like the perspective you get from traveling overseas and talking to people doing the same thing that we're doing, but doing it in a different context and with, as you've pointed out, different resources. I reckon that is a wonderful experience. And yeah, I'm over the moon that you and Deb and Sid get the chance to raise the standard in many of those the practices that are carried out in those clinics in Southern Asia and China, and the animals are better off for it. So a wonderful experience, I reckon.
Yes, well, I don't know whether we raise the standard of the jokes, Mark, but we try our best with helping them out with some of the procedures and that. And we also learn from them. It's amazing what, you know, there's always local variations on thing and you know what it's like. Any inquiring mind or student or even postgraduate person, they've always, you know, always thinking, and you always get questioned with you know, you brought up some questions that you have no idea, you know, what, and you think, gee, I wish I had thought of that. So, yeah, it's great. It's good fun. I enjoyed it. So, you know, maybe not. I'm waiting for the feedback from the, they fill in a evaluation form at the end, which is quite detailed, and they provide us a, you know, a score. Mark out of 5 or something or other, and fairly granular sort of scoring system. So it'd be interesting to see. I'll report back to everyone, Mark, on my score. See if I pass.
They wouldn't have you back, Brendan. They wouldn't have you back if you weren't. You know, they have a range of people that they could get to do this, and you having done it before, they know what they're in for, and they'd be looking forward to it.
Well, just briefly before we head off, Mark, there's another sort of continuing education event that's coming up soon, Mark, and that's one that we should briefly plug, and that's the Australian Veterinary Association Annual Conference, which is around about this time next month, Mark, towards the end, the last week of May, and it's here in my local town, Mark, Melbourne. So it'd be great if we see some of our listeners there. I'll certainly be attending. You were going to attend, but I'm not sure whether you can make it. Is that correct?
No, my circumstances have changed and I won't be able to be there, which, and look, I think a couple of things to say about the AVA conference. It's come back since the interlude of COVID, where face-to-face conferences were not a thing here in Australia. And that contact with your colleagues at a face-to-face conference, an immeasurably valuable thing to our welfare as professionals. So I recommend it for that. And yeah, any time that you are at a conference, I'd encourage people that are aware of our podcast. Maybe we don't know you. Maybe you haven't sent us an email yet, but make yourself known. Come up and say good day and tell us what you like and don't like about the podcast, and maybe have a bit of a chortle at one of Brendan's dad jokes, one of his punishing puns, and I know the AVA conference is going to be outstanding, and then we've got to look forward to the UPAV conference at the end of the year.
Yes, lots of things to look forward to, Mark, and I think with that, we might get back to normal programming next week when we'll cover a specific topic in unusual and exotic pets, Mark. But it's always good to chat about get-togethers and what's happening in the world in veterinary science. And I think, yeah, I'm lucky in order to occasionally go to see these overseas places, Mark, and chat to our colleagues. And maybe I will get up to see you up north, Mark. Who knows? I think with that, we'll get out of here. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Vet Podcast by the Vet Gurus. Don't forget to visit us at the website, vetgurus.com, where you can subscribe, view show notes, listen to previous episodes and more. You can contact us via email at vetgurus@gmail.com to ask a question or just say hi. Thanks again and see you next time.